Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 193. I'm recording it on Friday, December 18th, 2009. The P10 level today is 20. That's not good for people considering putting their money in stocks today. The music for this podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of the selection is Somewhere Sunny. This is my favorite musical selection of the ones I've used. This one and my two favorites are this one and Awesome Call. And I have a sentimental favorite, Morning Snowflake, but that's a different story altogether. The title of the podcast is My Vision. We had a Christmas party last night, got together with some friends from Arlington, the old neighborhood. Snow, predictions of a big snowstorm tomorrow here in Purcellville, Virginia. So it's starting to feel like Christmas, and this podcast is due to get up at the website the week after New Year's. So the idea with this one is sort of at the end of the year, the beginning of the new year, we reflect back and we ponder the future. And so the idea with this one is to list some of the things where I see the great safe withdrawal rate debate going in future years. My vision of the future, what we're going to accomplish, what I hope to achieve with this work we've put into this project of reforming replacing the failed buy and hold model of investing with the rational model, which I believe is a far superior model. I wrote down 35 items. And I like to keep these podcasts under 60 minutes, although I almost never do. If I'm going to keep it under 70, I can only give 2 minutes to each item. So I'm going to have to keep it snappy, which is probably a good thing if I'm forced to try to keep it snappy. So let's get to it. Rob Bennett's vision for the future of the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. Some of these are very modest ideas and should be easily accomplished, although in 7.5 years, we haven't been able to accomplish even the most modest of items. Some of them are very grandiose, and, you know, maybe they won't be achieved. I don't know. Maybe they'll be achieved in the very distant future. I don't know. I'd like to see them achieved, and my personal belief is if we accomplish the most modest, which I will refer to when I get to it, that would, in my mind, I feel that if we accomplish the most modest, we will ultimately accomplish even the most grandiose of these ideas, because the one leads to the other, according to a pretty darn strong logic chain in my mind. But if you see flaws in that, please do let me know. All right. Item number one, Rob Bennett's agenda for the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. There was a comment at the Four Pillars blog. The blog is called Quest for Four Pillars. And I did a guest blog entry there about a week ago, and there was a comment that a guy filed, and it really rang a bell for me. He said, I had referred to buy and hold as a get-rich-quick scheme, and the fellow wrote in, and he said, I don't think I've ever heard buy and hold described as a get-rich-quick scheme before. And I thought, boy, is that comment ever telling? Because that's the whole problem. You know, he's right. You don't often hear buy and hold described as a get-rich-quick scheme. Why not? Let's just say that it's all true. Say the buy and hold model's 100% perfect. Just say. Shouldn't we be hearing two sides to the story, even if that's the case? Isn't it healthy to have critics? Not everybody believes in buy and hold, do they? So why don't people come on blogs and discussion boards and make their case? It's because there's a social taboo. The stock selling industry has devoted hundreds of millions of dollars to promoting this approach, this model. And it's been such an intense campaign that a social taboo has developed that we can't even question it, because so many people now follow it and so many people have their life savings, you know, at risk. But that's not healthy. That's That means that we've stopped learning how investing works. The buy and hold model was actually a good thing in many ways, in that there are a lot of insights that were developed by the people who brought us, very important insights developed by the people who brought us buy and hold. But they did something really, really unfortunate when they cut off discussion, when they cut off the possibility of learning more, I believe. So part of my vision is that we would create a world, a new investor world, where it would be common for people to describe buy and hold as a get-rich-quick scheme. Not out of any nastiness or any desire to start a fight or anything like that, just because that's what they believe. And because the rest, those of us who believe in buy and hold, I don't, but just say that I did, those of us who believed in it would say, this is good. We want to hear different points of view. So come on in, friends. Tell us what you think. And if your criticisms are strong, we'll have to come up with strong arguments to argue back. And if they're weak, of course, we'll expose them. But we'll either do one of two things. We'll either strengthen our own conviction that buy and hold works, which would be good, or you will persuade us that buy and hold is foolishness and, you know, we'll go on to some other model. So I think it'd be a better world if we saw effective, strong criticisms, strongly worded criticisms of buy and hold as an everyday event, you know, throughout the internet. Agenda item two, get the old school safe withdrawal rate studies corrected. Well, this one blows my mind. The whole great debate began with a post that I put to Motley Fool, pointing out that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, these are the studies we all use to plan our retirements, get the numbers wildly wrong because they fail to account for valuations. So all the numbers are wrong. This has been confirmed by numerous big name experts, William Bernstein, Ed Easterling, Larry Swedrow, on and on and on. Even the goons now acknowledge that the old school studies get the numbers wrong. But have the studies been corrected? No. No. You have to laugh, not to cry. These are studies people use to plan their retirements. Everybody who's looked at the data knows they're wrong, and the studies haven't been corrected for 7.5 years. Millions of people are going to suffer busted retirements because of demonstrably false claims. Well, clearly, a big agenda item is to get those studies corrected. And enough said on that one. There's really nothing more to say. But all I will say is that the one good thing that came out of the fact those studies haven't been corrected, I think it's a horrible, horrible thing. But one good thing came out of it is it was when I saw that those studies were not going to be corrected, that there were people who felt that the proper thing, when we learned the studies got the numbers wrong, was just to brush it under the rug and not tell anybody. As Scott Burns, financial columnist Scott Burns, told me, it would be catastrophically unproductive to tell people that those studies were wrong, even though we know they are. What that taught me is that this model, there's something terribly, terribly, terribly wrong with it. Because if a model, it's the buy and hold model that caused the studies to get the numbers wrong. And if the model causes us to get our retirement plans wrong, then what good is it? And if the retirement plans can't be or the retirement studies can't be corrected because of a fear that it would cause the model to fall, I think it'd be fair to say the model is built on pretty weak structure. The model deserves to fall. The only difference between me and all these others is that we both understand that if the safe withdrawal rate studies are corrected, the model's going to fall. But they seem to think that's a bad thing. Whereas my view is, hey, if you've got all the retirement numbers wrong, let it fall. Who needs it? Start over. Let's get a model that works. Agenda item three. Well, just the follow-up on that. Get those corrections publicized. In other words, when we get those studies corrected, one of the things the goons will say nowadays, as I say, they don't really deny anymore. They used to deny that the studies were wrong, but now they acknowledge it. But they say, oh, there's nothing wrong. We've acknowledged the studies are wrong. And they'll point to some post where, you know, Larry Swedrow calls the old school studies garbage in, garbage out research. Well, fair enough. Larry Swedrow did do that, and that's commendable, to be sure. But why not publicize it? How many people have read Larry Swedrow's post? Out of the millions of people who have used these retirement studies to plan their retirements, how many do you think read the Larry Swedrow post? You know, 0.01%? Why don't we get some articles? Why don't we get a front page article in the New York Times? You know, buy and hold cost millions of failed retirements. Get an article on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, the cover story of Money Magazine. What are we waiting around for? Well, it's not enough to even correct the studies. We've got to publicize the corrections. And then another follow-up item, agenda item number 4. After the corrections are publicized and everybody knows about these dangerous studies, well, another, I mean, I didn't include this as an agenda item, but obviously one follow-up would be, you know, when you learn the studies are wrong, you want to put out proper studies, you know, correct studies. Well, we've done that. The retirement risk evaluator at the website is an accurate retirement planning calculator. So that's part of it. But another one is, let's then, after the problems with the studies are publicized and the new studies or the new calculators are created and publicized, why not engage in some self-examination? Why did we get this so wrong? Why did we mess up so badly? You know, that's part of it. Notice, when you learn that you made a big mistake like this, you don't cover it up. You don't sweep it under the rug. The proper thing to do is to say, look, yeah, of course, say I'm sorry. Yeah, I made a mistake. But then the next step is to learn from your mistakes. We all make mistakes. We all make mistakes. Do we learn from our mistakes? Let's learn from this mistake. How did we get it so wrong? What you know? And basically, all these other agenda items I'm going to mention are agenda items that are a result of my examination of that question. How did we get it so wrong? In other words, when I discovered that the studies were wrong, I waited to see the corrections. When I didn't see the corrections, I puzzled over it. Why aren't we seeing corrections? And then I went the next step and I said, what would we learn if we were to, you know, deal with this in a forthright manner? What would we learn? And basically, the entire rational model, the valuation-informed indexing strategy, all follows from that. Well, it's nice that Rob Bennett's done that, and I hope that you know, the work I've done benefits some people. But I would like to see a lot more people, you know, both participating in the learning experience. You know, William Bernstein should be learning, and John Bogle, and Scott Burns, and Jonathan Clements, and on and on and on. So let's correct the studies, let's publicize the corrections, let's put out corrected studies, and, you know, let's launch a debate about how we got so much so wrong. Item 5. And this is an important one. Ensure that the advocates of buy and hold get the credit they deserve for getting us halfway to rational investing. So, you know, I put this in. I wish it wasn't necessary. I wish people would just assume that would be part of our agenda. That, of course, we want to give recognition to the people who made the mistakes, that while they made mistakes, that, you know, they're not just mistake makers. They don't walk around with a big M on their forehead. They're also insight generators. And we wouldn't be where there would be no rational investing today, you know, if it were not for John Bogle and the thousands of others of buy and hold advocates. And there would be no valuation informed indexing today if it were not for John Bogle and thousands of other buy and hold advocates. So these people are not mistake generators. You know, they're humans. They made mistakes, but they also generated wonderful insights. So obviously you want to give them credit for that. The last thing we want to do, you know, one of the things we've been developing insights, but they haven't been having the impact they should have because we haven't, you know, the world doesn't know about them. You know, we've got this small community of people knows about them. We want to get this out to the entire world. And the reason it hasn't gotten out is the defensiveness of the buy and hold advocates, that they, you know, they don't want people to know about the mistakes. We don't want to make the same. We would be making a similar mistake if we were to say, oh, you know, this is all about getting even. You know, we're going to prove them wrong. Nah, 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 nah. You know, I told you so, whatever. You know, that's a big waste of time, a big waste of energy. So let's balance our approach. Let's say, yes, you know, we very much want to correct the mistakes. But two, we very much want to honor, you know, honor and respect and show affection for the people who have gone behind us, before us, that led us to where we can see things that they couldn't see. That's what I believe happened here, that the people who developed buy and hold, they saw things that the investing analysts who came before them did not see. And they moved us forward. But because all, you know, we all have limited vision, they could only see so far. And now, 30 years on, we're able to see things that they could never see. And what we want to do is hold hands with them and, you know, have a national debate and then get about the business of, you know, bringing in the golden age of middle-class investing. So we don't want to adopt, you know, if they adopted a defensive tone, we don't want to adopt a tone of retribution in response. That would be stupid, in Rob Bennett's humble opinion. Item 6, open up all internet discussion boards and blogs to honest and civil and reasoned discussion. That's, you know, and well, I have two here. Maybe I should read the other one. Number six is the one I mentioned that is the very modest goal, which is, here's what I would like to be able to do, and this is how I felt since the first day, May 13th, 2002. I'd like to wake up in the morning, tomorrow morning, and say, oh, nice day. Think I'm going to go on the internet. And I'm, you know what? It's really nice to know that I can go on the internet. I can go to any discussion board or any blog on investing on the internet and state my honest views of how investing works. And if there's somebody who finds some value in that, they can take advantage. And if not, they can just pass along, and that's fine. You know, that is the most modest goal that I could ever spell out, or that anyone else could ever spell out. And that's really all I've ever wanted to achieve from the first day. Now, as I say, some of these goals you're going to hear are extremely grandiose. I mean, you know, frighteningly so. But if we achieve that very modest goal of being able to post our honest views, there are hundreds of people who have said that buy and hold cannot work with their comments. If not directly so, they've said that indirectly. And there are thousands who have expressed the desire for honest posting. So, you know, if we get past this point where the buy and holders are intensely defensive and where they're using all this trickery to silence people who have questions that need to be answered, if we achieve that, all the rest is going to follow. I don't get the feeling that many people get this. But this is sort of it's like a yes or no question. If buy and hold is responsible for millions of failed retirements, you know, buy and hold crashes. I mean, the logic there is just undeniable. And if buy and hold crashes, there has to be a model to replace it. We have to have some model to invest by. And my belief is it's going to be rational investing. I don't say that I've gotten everything right. That's for, you know, that's to be determined through this national debate. But I think I've gotten a lot right, and I certainly think I've put forward a lot of good questions, and I think I've done a lot. You know, there's a lot of materials at the website that should help get this debate started and get it moving in the right direction. But as we hear, you know, hopefully not hundreds or thousands of people participating, but millions, I think these other things are going to follow. I'm just telling you what I see. And so, you know, it's a bit of a frustration that we've been held back for 7.5 years, to be sure. Not a little, it's a lot of a frustration. But the other side of the story is you get frustrated and you get into this negativity, and then you look at the positive and you say, holy moly, look what's going to happen if we ever achieve this most modest of goals imaginable. We already have the right to post honestly. All we would have to do is have that right recognized. Wow. Now, number seven is to extend this, you know, this right that I'm talking about applies only in the investing area. I don't know in other areas whether honest posting has been banned or anything like that. I have no way of knowing. I pretty much only post in personal finance boards and blogs. But I'm certain that this kind of trickery has been applied elsewhere, and I don't like that. And it seems to me if we can show, I think the whole idea that the laws of the United States would not apply on the internet, that idea is insane. And that's basically what the Communications Decency Act says in practical purposes. If you want background on this, go to the Bandit Motley Fool section of the site and read my email to Representative Wolf, and you'll get the background. But you know, the basic idea is people can defame you on the internet. They can run smear campaigns against you. They can threaten to kill you or kill your loved ones. And you can't do anything about it, because if you try to bring a legal case, the lawyers will tell you They can't take it on contingency because this Communications Decency Act says the people who own websites can't be sued for permitting defamation on their sites, even when they're aware of it, even when it's brought to their attention. I think that's insane, and I think that needs to be changed, and I think if that was changed, all this ugliness would, not all of it would go away, but most of it would go away. You know, there's always going to be ugliness in this world of ours, but we shouldn't be encouraging it. So the answer is to make the laws of the United States applicable to the internet. And that would help not only investing boards, personal finance boards, it would help every blog, every website. So I think that would be a good thing. And, you know, it's always nice to look for the silver lining in any dark cloud. The campaign of terror has been very much a dark cloud. If we are able to change the law that governs the internet, I think that would be a major silver lining. So that's something I'd like to see come of this. That would make me feel good. It would make me feel that a lot of this negative energy had ultimately produced something good. And, of course, it would help everybody. It would even help the goons, because I think a lot of the goons have engaged in behavior that they never would have engaged in had they known that there were going to be consequences, that there was going to be a price to pay. And a lot of them have been led to believe that they can get away with this behavior, and when they're held liable for it, they're going to feel bad. And if a community member should be telling them, no, we're not going to, you know, allow this behavior, and you know, that's just the way it's got to be. There's a reason why this behavior has never been considered acceptable in civilized society, going back thousands of years. And the idea that now that we've got an electronic society, that all the rules of human nature have been overturned, I find far-fetched. So I'd like to see that happen. That's something within Rob Bennett's vision of the future of our discussions. I'd like to, agenda item 8, I'd like to bring bulls and bears together. Something that comes up from time to time, people will say, oh, Rob, you know, why post at a board? You know, there's obviously a majority at a lot of these boards and blogs that like buy and hold. Why point out the flaws of buy and hold there? You know, maybe 10%, 20% agree with you. Why don't you go to some bear board? Well, what I'm trying to do is spread knowledge of the realities of stock investing. If I go to some bear board where everybody agrees with me, how's that going to help anything? I'm going to go to all the people who already agree that buy and hold doesn't work and try to persuade them that buy and hold doesn't work. How does that advance the ball? You advance the ball by talking to the people who think it does work. Those are the people you need to talk to. The bulls need to talk to the bears. The bears need to talk to the bulls. We can all learn from each other. Anyone who has something constructive and positive and life-affirming to say about investing should be involved, engaged in the discussions of investing on discussion board forums. And blogs, Rob Bennett's opinion. Let's bring people together instead of building, you know, let's build, what's the saying? Let's build, you can build walls or you can build bridges. You know, stop building walls and let's build bridges. Maybe the bulls have something to learn from the bears, and the bears maybe have something to learn from the bulls, I suspect. Item 9, I'd like to see a series. This is just it's called my vision. This is a vision I've had in my head for some time now. Money Magazine ran an article in the January 2009 issue where they talked about, there was a guy who asked a wonderful question, a guy that stood up at some conference where the editors of Money were speaking, and he said, how bad would things have to get before you guys would admit that you were wrong? Man. Is that ever common sense? Is that, you know, is that Rob Bennett speaking? And they gave this, it was wonderful that they did the article on it, but they gave a phony baloney response. I was glad they reported on the question, but then they gave this answer that said, oh, maybe we were a little bit wrong. Maybe stock investing is a little more dangerous than we thought. Well, that's exactly the wrong conclusion. The reality is stock investing is less risky than most people think. When you abandon the buy and hold model, you find out that stock investing is less risky, but it's only less risky for those who are willing to take valuations into consideration. For those who don't take valuations into consideration, it's insanely risky. So we shouldn't be telling anybody to do that. But I wrote a long email to Money, and I think it's I think it's on the blog somewhere. I know I did a podcast about it. I definitely did a podcast about it. I'm not sure if I think I put up in the blog as well. So you can probably find that if you search for Money Magazine, something like that. But, you know, I told them, I said, you know, the answer to the guy's question is that buy and hold doesn't work. We need to switch to a new model. And, you know, they didn't respond. They didn't respond. They're not ready for that. But I look forward to a day, as I say, if we can open up the internet to honest posting, I think we're just going to gather support for this kind of change. And we'll have, you know, we'll get support for the new model. And the way I see we usher in the new model, the whole national debate is we have cover stories on Money Magazine with the title, I Was Wrong. I Was Wrong by John Bogle. I Was Wrong by Bill Bernstein. I Was Wrong by Scott Burns. I Was Wrong by Rob Bennett. I Was Wrong by Robert Shiller. I Was Wrong, you know, by Bill Bangin. I Was Wrong by Michael Kitsis. On and on and on. You know, there's all kinds of changes, and they're all related. And the single biggest change, of course, is we have to consider valuations in a concrete sense. You know, in a number sense, that's the change we need. But there's more to it than that. You have to ask yourself, why haven't we done that? And the big reason we haven't done that is this idea that if you're an investing expert, you have to be, you know, above the world. You have to be above your humanity. You can't make a mistake. You can't admit a mistake. And that's what needs to change. That spirit needs to change. The pomposity and the arrogance need to be trashed and replaced with humility and concern for one's, you know, listeners, one's readers. And the key to that is the words, I was wrong. We all need to learn how to say it, anyone in this field. And boy, that'll change the history of investing overnight. Because when you say I was wrong, other people who know things you don't know, who come from a different set of life experiences, feel emboldened to now share what they know. And what I have learned during these discussions is lots of people out there know that buy and hold doesn't work. Lots of people. You know, it may only be 10% of the population, but 10% of the population in the United States is a big number. It's in the millions. So lots of people know this. And I want them all contributing. I don't want to shut them out. I want them to speak up. I want them to share what they know. I don't only want to permit honest posting. I want to encourage it. I want to welcome it. So that would send a signal. 10 cover stories, Money Magazine, all with the title I Was Wrong, and then the name of some, you know, expert. And he would just write about how he was wrong. We would change the history of investing in those 10 months, I believe. Item 10, rebuild the destroyed boards. I've always felt bad, you know, we've destroyed all these boards, and I'd like to rebuild them. And I think people think of that as far-fetched, and I don't. I mean, if we get to the point where we open up the internet, we will have people that will help us rebuild these boards. I would like to rebuild El Supremo's board was destroyed, the nofeeboards.com, because he permitted honest posting. That was his crime. I think that was wrong. And I think one of the things that's going on today is so many of us, those who have participated in the campaign of terror and the abuse of posting, they feel shame that they've done these sorts of things, destroy boards. It's unbelievable. It's just unconscionable and unbelievable. Well, we're going to have to heal those wounds. There's nothing that would heal them like putting those boards back in place. You know, we could find El Supremo. I know his address, and we could find him. And if we rebuild his board, you know, get some. All he needs is to have some people show up, and you know, if we're posting, if we have honest posting at Bogleheads, there's lots of people there. So we just put up a thread saying, "Hey, we'd like some people to help start a new board. It's going to be run by El Supremo. His board was destroyed in the campaign of terror, so we're going to bring it back. Bring back the Safe Withdrawal Rate Research Group board. I'd like to bring back the Motley Fool board. You know, all this sort of thing. I think that would be a healing move. So that's, you know, that's part of my vision for the future." Maybe not, you know, I don't know when. I'd like to see this all happen in 24 hours. Probably not going to happen that way. But I'd like it, but, you know, I think it's a good goal to have for the future, and I think it's doable. A lot of people, you know, some people, oh, I don't know if I can remember the quote. I heard it from, attributed to Robert Kennedy, but some people see what's wrong and ask why, and other people see what could be. Some people see what is and ask why. Other people see what could be and ask why not. Why not? Why can't can't we rebuild these boards? Never been done before? Okay. Let's do it now. Let's show them that just because it's never been done before doesn't mean it can't be done now. Let's take something negative and make it positive. Item 11, shake Mel Lindauer's hand, shake John Graney's hand, shake John Bogle's hand. Well, when I put up an announcement at Vanguard Diehards Board, I said, I'm going to be attending. They have an annual meeting where John Bogle speaks and other people. Bernstein speaks, Larry Swedrow. And I said, I'm going to be attending. And a lot of people were excited. They said, hey, we're going to get to meet the devil live and in person. See if Rob really has hooves, like Mel Lindauer says, and a red tail and a pitchfork. I said, I'm going to be there, friends and neighbors, live and in person. And I said, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to walk across the room, say, where's Mel, and shake his hand. Because we need to, you know, patch these wounds. That's something I'm looking forward to. Shaking Mel Lindauer's hand, shaking John Graney's hand, shaking John Bogle's hand. There ain't one person alive doesn't want to know how to invest effectively. Not one of us. So we're all in it together. We all need to care for each other. We need to care for the truth. We need to care for accuracy in the retirement studies we put forward, but we need to care for each other too. It's a combination of head and heart. Makes this world go round. Rob Bennett's opinion. I wish it wasn't so controversial. Start a newsletter at Motley Fool. I had an idea in my head one day. I got started at Motley Fool. I have a soft spot in my heart for Motley Fool. Always have. And, you know, they were going through a lot of different, monetization efforts, you know, when I was there. And nothing worked. And recently, I think they've had a lot of success with newsletters. They put out different newsletters in different fields. And I think, you know, investing mostly, but because they have so many people come to the site, they've been able to make money from that because they obviously can advertise, promote the newsletters there at the site. And they get enough people, you know, newsletters are high-priced items, so they get enough people coming in to make a good amount of money. There's a couple things I'd like at Motley Fool. One, I'd like to have the old board back, the Retire Early Board, because that was our first board, and I'm always going to have a soft spot in my heart for that community. I don't think any of the community members are still there. Maybe a few are, but we could bring some of the old people back, and we could bring new people in. You know, we can create the experience. But I'd like to have a column at Motley Fool, you know, on the front page, and that would bring people into our movement, into the Retire Early movement, into the indexing movement. And I'd like to have a newsletter on valuation informed indexing, and I think that would be great for everybody. It'd be great for me. Presumably I get paid and it would bring people to my site and, give me name recognition and, be great for Motley Fool because it's dynamite. I mean, we've had great response, you know, among both regular investors and among financial planners, you know, look at the site. I mean, it's huge positive response. And again, it would be healing, you know, because, you know, it would be a signal to everybody. You know, the buy and hold era is over. You know, we're entering this new era, and yet at the same time, you know, a newsletter with the name Valuation Informed Indexing is a tribute to John Bogle and all buy and holders because what's it got right there in the title? Indexing, right? That's part of the buy and hold model. So I think that would be a wonderful thing. Now, as again, this is the sort of thing people will say, "Oh, Rob," you know, there's a lot of jealousy. One of the big issues, and it's been discussed. Not often, but every now and then somebody brings it up. They say, a lot of these people who are, you know, involved in these smear campaigns, they're just jealous of Rob. You know, Rob came up with some good ideas and they're jealous. And that's true. And, it's very sad, very sad. Jealousy is a negative emotion. I think it's also sad, though, that community members have not helped them. The way I used to say it is that somebody should take John Graney aside and explain the facts of life to him and Mel Lindauer. You know, this isn't the way people behave. And that hasn't happened, and I don't understand that. I don't understand that. I try to understand every puzzle, but I have a hard time with that one. Because when you allow people to behave poorly, you put them into this death spiral where they behave poorly, and then they have to behave more poorly to cover up the original poor behavior. It gets worse and worse and worse. Why do that? Why not just cut it off, you know, early on? So I think people will look at that and they'll say, oh, Rob, he thinks he's so great, he should have his own newsletter. Well, you know, valuation-informed indexing is I believe passive indexing is the indexing strategy of the past. Valuation-informed indexing is the indexing strategy of the future. And indexing is important for middle-class investors. It's a simple way to invest. Middle-class investors need a simple way. So it has nothing to do with whether I think I'm important or anything else. It has to do with helping middle-class investors learn what they need to learn to become effective investors. So I think it'd be a great thing. I'd like to see that move forward. Item 13, gain recognition of John Waller Russell's work, his research work, you know, as being the most important investing research of our time, which I think is true. And John Walter Russell's website, if you want to check out his research, is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. The work there speaks for itself. But if you want to hear what other community members have said, look at the letters to the editor section and you'll see some comments of people that, you know, are most grateful to John for the work he's done. But combined with that, I'd like to see the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities recognized for the work they have done. Nobody else has done the work that John has done, but we've had hundreds of people contribute to these, you know, to the insights we've developed. And this is, you know, I say it over and over again. I get tired of hearing myself say it. This has not been one guy sitting in a room thinking grand thoughts. But that, you know, I think that's wonderful. You know? What this shows, what our communities have done, shows the power of the internet to change the world for the good. This internet technology was not available in earlier times, and that's one of the reasons why our knowledge of investing is so primitive today. You know, a lot of the investing experts are smart people, but how smart can one person be? What we did in those communities until they were destroyed or compromised is, you know, we opened up, we were sharing, people were sharing insights, people from all over the globe, all sorts of backgrounds, you know, men and women, rich and poor, you know, Republicans and Democrats, you know, buy and holders and rationals, just everybody. And that's a powerful thing. That's a powerful thing. People don't realize how powerful it is today. I think the internet is the internet discussion board is a communications medium that's often ridiculed, and it shouldn't be. There's, you know, no one knows better than me that there's a bad side to it, but the potential there is just huge. So I'd like to see those communities recognized for the work they've done. They've done important work. Item 14, get all bans reversed at blogs. Well, the whole personal finance blogosphere is, you know, I've had all kinds of experiences. I haven't done as much work in the blogs as I have in discussion boards, but in the past year, I've posted in some blogs. I've posted comments, and I've posted guest blog entries. And some places, I've gotten wonderful experience. I've had wonderful experiences. The Weekonomics blog, wonderful experience. The Money and Such blog, wonderful experience. The Sci-Fi blog, wonderful experience. You know, there are others. Frugal Dad, I've had lots of good experiences outside the investing realm. The investing realm's been sort of a mix. You know, Get Rich Slowly blog, there have been some good experiences and some, a couple that were not so good, but the ones that were not so good were very much not so good. You know, anyway, you know, all kinds of blogs. Good experiences at the Digerati Life blog. But, you know, Oblivious Investor, I had good experiences, lots of good comments, lots of interesting feedback, but Mike Piper has banned me because his readers were getting, you know, they were feeling sick to the stomach when they would read what the historical data said. And in other words, it wasn't nicey nice. I wasn't telling the buy and hold worked. And so Mike felt that from a marketing standpoint, it was going to hurt him if people knew the realities of stock investing. Well, that's a pretty sad statement for buy and hold, isn't it? I sure think so. Same thing with, there were a couple others. I don't remember them all. Free Money Finance banned me. They banned me because I told the truth about safe withdrawal rates. They said, oh, you're dominating the blog, you know, because you're telling the truth. It was, they had somebody else there citing the old school studies, and the numbers are all wrong. And I cited the accurate numbers, and they say, could you please not comment anymore? Again, sad story for the buy and hold model. The other one, Carl Richard's blog, Behavior Gap. Loves my blog. Oh, Rob, very important work. Valuation informed indexing's fantastic, but can't have you, posting accurately what the historical data says at my blog. It hurts what I'm trying to, get across here. If you can't allow honest and of course that's embarrassing. How do you think these bloggers feel when other fellow bloggers learn that they've banned honest posting? How do you think that makes them look? Makes them look bad. We've got the First Amendment to the Constitution, free speech. And if there's anybody that should recognize free speech, it's personal finance bloggers. No, I mean bloggers. The whole idea is free speech. Isn't that the whole point? And if there's any area where free speech is necessary, it's in investment analysis or investment, advice. You're going to ban honest posting on investment advice? I mean, they look awful. They feel that they have no option. They feel that, hey, I can't, how am I going to get links from L. Lindauer if I allow honest posting? What am I going to do? Well, what you got to do is everybody has to decide for themselves what they're going to do. There's no one answer, but you have to be true to yourself. What you can do is if you think you have good arguments for buy and hold, you should make those arguments. That's what I think. If you don't want to discuss it, you should just say, hey, I allow different viewpoints and I'm not gonna say one way or the other. People can form their own conclusions. That's another way to deal with it. But banning honest posting, I think, is a bad way because it makes you look really bad and it creates sort of this bad feeling in the minds of others because they feel, they don't know how to react. They maybe like you as a person, but frankly, how much respect can they feel for you if you can't defend your ideas? If you ban honest posting, you're basically making a statement. I cannot defend my ideas. I don't know how. I don't have any arguments. I don't have any data. So I think that's unfortunate, and I think there's a community aspect to that. In other words, again, it's one of these situations where people behave poorly, and the community permits it to happen, and so it gets worse. If the community needs to step in early on, and if the community stepped in when, Four Pillars banned honest posting, they'd say, Four Pillars would reverse it. He'd say, oh, yeah, what was I thinking? That was so dumb. But they didn't do that. And so now it's a week gone by. Well, in 3 more weeks, it'll be a month. And in 6 more months, it'll be 6 months, And it gets to a point where it's pretty darn embarrassing to reverse yourself. So I would like to see that change. I would like to see the personal finance blogosphere work together, to promote each blog and to promote the entire personal finance blogosphere and have some, self-respect and say, look, we have standards. We're a community. We have beliefs, and we believe in free speech. We don't necessarily believe Rob's investing ideas. I don't think that would be healthy. I don't think the majority does, and they shouldn't be saying they do if they don't. But they should be standing up for free speech. I believe that strongly. I can't even see an argument otherwise, frankly, myself. 15, organize efforts of bloggers to warn others about smear campaigns, etc. Well, I don't want to... This comes up from time to time. The grainy goons, of course, again, because of the shame they feel, because of their behavior over the first 7 years. When I posted other blogs, they enter things into Google. It tells them when I'm at a blog, they look for the name Rob Bennett. And they go over and they take their smear campaigns and they spread them all over the blogosphere. Well, new bloggers shouldn't have to put up with that, So somebody should be able to tell them. Now, I tell them. I'll say, oh, this, these people, they have a long record of abusive posting. Here's my email to Representative Wolf. Here's an article where I quoted 101 community members saying they'd like to have honest posting. Whatever. I'll link to something. Or I'll link sometimes to the grainy board. I'll say, here's the board where they meet. Here's the board where they discuss their so-called strategies of destroying different blogs. But I shouldn't have to do that. I went to the Money Blog Network, which is a forum for people that have personal finance blogs, and I said, let's organize an effort here so that we can maybe identify the bad guys, and then when these grainy goons attack some blog, we'll just say, look, you know, check what the people at Money Blog Network say about them, like a good housekeeping seal of approval, except to be a good housekeeping seal of disapproval. And so, you know, by the, you know, the, some of the leading bloggers meet there. You know, Get Rich Slowly, J.D. Roth meets there, and lots of others. Lazy Man and Money and the Digerati Life, all kinds of people. So if you've got all these top bloggers telling you these guys are thugs, these guys are internet predators, you're going to shut them down, right? Instead of having to go through, you know, 30 posts before you can figure out that they're goons, you know, Rob can tell you on the first one, because I, of course, can recognize them, you know, 10 miles away. And then you can just read the, you know, the write-up and at the money. No, but not in Rob's words. I mean, it's fine if you read my words, but it'd be better if it were somebody else's words, because, you know, if you're looking for, you know, it's better to have a third party. So the Money Blog Network would be a third party. So I think that makes all the sense in the world. I proposed that at Money Blog Network, and people had the thread shut down. People had the thread shut down. I'd like, you know, I'd like to know the argument for shutting that down. That makes zero sense to this boy. So organized efforts. Okay, item 16, litigation. Litigation. I had a recent podcast, lawsuits, etc. And so one of the things I see, you know, as part of my vision for the future, is lawsuits against the people who have destroyed our blogs, destroyed our boards. Lawsuits. I, of course, have obligations to my family. These people have tried to destroy my business. You know, so I've lost lots of money because of these internet predators. And there are now millions of people who are going to suffer failed retirements because of them. There's all these experts who have had their names dragged through the mud. John Bogle and Larry Swedrow, Bill Bernstein. You know, they post at these boards that are run essentially. There's, you know, by internet thugs. I mean, I don't know what else you can call them. They threaten physical violence on people that put forward, you know, quote accurately what the historical data says. Amazing facts, friends and neighbors. But, I mean, I think that reflects on Bogle's reputation and these other people, that they didn't do anything, that they're afraid of these people. And as we continue to suffer stock crashes and as the economic crisis worsens, middle-class people are going to be angry. I don't, you know, they're already angry. You can see it in this healthcare debate. The people are upset. One of the things the polling shows is a lot of the public supports, regardless of what you think about it, a lot of the public supports health reform. But the polls have turned against it, and a big reason is because people think the economy is the bigger issue. Well, the economic problem was caused by the reckless promotion of buy and hold for 30 years after the historical data showed that valuations affect long-term returns. That's part of our story. So, you know, there's going to be lawsuits any way you look at it. I just can't see how there wouldn't be. There's going to be lawsuits from people that suffered failed retirements. There's going to be lawsuits from people whose asset allocations are wrong because of this arrogance of the buy and holders. And it's so unfortunate, so unfortunate. And I think we're going to need legislation sort of to deal with this in a global way. You know, we have to somehow help people, but we can't have a million lawsuits. I mean, we'll just never get out of this. I think the way to do it is to help people in a sort of general sense by opening the internet up to honest posting, you know, and that helps everybody. And maybe have some kind of amnesty against people who have advocated buy and hold after the time that the research showed that it cannot work. But so I'm in favor of an amnesty on the what I'd call the substance issues, but on the process issues, that's a little different matter. That's a matter where we've had, you know, smear campaigns and this sort of thing. And even if you personally believe buy and hold works, as I believe most of these people do, or maybe all of them, you know that smear campaigns are wrong. Everybody knows that. But on that issue, I think the way to go is these, you know, we could have this legislation to open the internet up to honest posting. So there's lots of ways to handle these issues. To the extent we can limit the lawsuits or possibly eliminate them if we want to shoot the moon, that's good. I mean, yeah, that's good. Lawsuits are, you know, my view, and I think the view of most reasonable people is that lawsuits are a last resort, not a first resort. So we want to do that only if every other avenue is closed. But in fairness, the goons have indeed tried to close every other avenue. So it's going to be hard. You know, I think the odds favor the fact that there are going to be lawsuits today, but I would love to be proven wrong, that's for sure. Okay, I'm gonna have to speed up. Item 19, legislation to help. Well, that's I just discussed that. That's legislation to help all the people who are hurt by the bad advice. So that would be part of a global legislative solution. So I've already talked about that one. 18. New understanding of what constitutes an expert. See, this is one of these global ones. But in other words, I think our whole understanding of what constitutes an investing expert has to change. We tend to think of investing as a numbers game, and it is in part that. It is 50% that, but it's 50% an emotions game, and that's almost the opposite. Takes a very different kind of background, a very different kind of psychology to understand emotions from what it does to be good at numbers. And we need the numbers people, but we need the emotions people too. We need both. I call this the changing of the guard, and this is one of the most sensitive points. One of the points that we would come up in our discussions is what upset a lot of the goons is that they were going to lose power. They felt, you know, turf wars. That's what this comes down to a lot of times. And so they'd say to me, you know, oh, are you gonna, you know, are you talking about turf wars? And I'd say, well, you know, there's no getting around it. It's going to change the leadership of our boards. Doesn't mean that these people have to be left out in the cold, but it does mean they're going to have to share power because you can't. The current way doesn't work. Doesn't come close to working. It's dysfunctional. So there is going to be a changing of the guards, and you know, it's the way it is. You wish you didn't have to go through these sorts of political battles, but it's the way it is. And I think the longer we duck it, the worse we make the problem. The best way to a solution is the direct, clean, quick route to a solution. Item 19, the triumph of behavioral finance 2.0. What I refer to there is I have a podcast entitled Behavioral Finance 2.0, and what that's about is I'm in the behavioral finance school, which says, you know, emotions affect investing a great deal. But a lot of people in that school, they do a great job at describing all the problems that human emotions, you know, cause. And that's great. But what people really need to hear are solutions. What do we do about it? And what I have come to believe is all the emotion comes from the belief in buy and hold. Now, maybe that sounds too neat, you know, and maybe I'm wrong. But I have never seen, I've seen such intense emotion from the buy-in holders. I mean, just unreal defensiveness. And I've never seen anybody not defending buy and hold behave in an inappropriate way. I'm not saying it never happens. I'm just saying I haven't seen it. And that leads me to believe that if you did away with buy and hold, or at least explained the flaws in it so that you know, people who wanted to have good long-term results would know to move away from it. I think you'd do away with most of the emotion that causes, you know, bad investing decisions. And it's not really all that hard to understand why. Buy and hold is the opposite of what works. In other words, the message of the historical data is you must always consider valuation. Stocks offer an amazing long-term value proposition, but you must consider valuations. If you fail to do that, you're essentially doomed in the long term. Not in the short term, but in the long term. Buy and hold says just the opposite. It says ignore valuation. Stick with that same stock allocation no matter what. I believe that all of us have common sense. And on some level of consciousness, we just know that buy and hold can't work. And yet, we want it to work. We have a get-rich-quick impulse. We all have common sense, and we all have a get-rich-quick impulse. So we want it to work, and when the experts tell us it can work, we're like, yeah, baby, you know, this is what I want to hear. But that voice of common sense makes us uneasy. And it's that battle between common sense and the get-rich-quick impulse that causes this intense emotionalism that is characteristic of stock investing and no other field that I can think of. I can't think of any field that's as emotion-packed as the investing field, where, you know, you can't discuss numbers. I mean, you can't even discuss the results of a numerical calculation without having a nuclear explosion. It's breathtaking. There's no field. I mean, I used to work on Capitol Hill. I heard discussions of abortion and impeachment proceedings and the Iraq War, and I've never seen anything like what I've seen when I reported accurately the safe withdrawal rate. I mean, nothing even close. So I have come to believe that buy and hold is really all that investing analysis should be. It should be urging people not to fall for that trap. That's pretty much it. That's a big job because you have to you know, explain it in lots of different ways. You have to answer lots of different questions. But that's pretty much it. Investing is pretty simple. As long as you understand that valuation matters, it's pretty darn easy. It's not complicated. But that adds so many layers of complexity. And I think that's the future of behavioral finance. And so that's part of my vision. So again, it's grandiose, isn't it? But it all follows. If we're going to fix the retirement studies, the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, doesn't a change in behavioral finance follow? Because if behavioral finance 1.0, the current behavioral finance school, worked, we wouldn't have these problems. These studies would have been fixed years ago. So it's sort of like we're all under a spell. We're all under the buy and hold spell. And the way out of the spell is straight talk about the emotional side of investing. And the emotional side of investing is valuations. That's all overvaluation is the product of emotion. So when you're saying, let's talk about valuations, what you're saying is, let's talk about human emotion. And that is a huge change. That just changes everything. And that's why I think if we achieve one of these goals, we're going to achieve all of them. Because you open the door and they all just come flooding in. What's really happened historically is Bogle and Malkiel and Fama and all these others developed this wonderful foundation. They made a mistake. Nobody's perfect. And then the way they built the model had so many rationalizations that it blocked out all emotion / valuation questions. You know, I mean, it didn't block them out. You could sort of say those words, but you couldn't talk about them seriously. And there's this pent up learning experience just waiting to get out, and it's been building for 30 years. And when we put our foot in the door, the door is just going to swing open, and we're just going to have all this good stuff shining on us. And it's going to be a blinding light. I believe. That's what I believe. Item number 20, I would like to have anytime the Dow number is reported or the S&P number is reported, I would like to develop a consensus that we should also report the valuation adjusted Dow number and the valuation adjusted S&P number. That in itself would change the history of investing, because then at the top of the bubble, the Dow and the S&P were valued at 3x fair value. Well, if people knew that, you know, you would report the accurate number. You would report the nominal number. Say the Dow was at 12,000, and you would report the real number, adjusted for valuations, 4,000. That would give people a very different feeling about stocks. Instead of thinking, hey, stocks have been doing great, they're at 12,000, they'd say, hey, stocks were 4,000. I better be careful. Maybe I shouldn't have my money, because what you're telling people is that they're going to be falling from 12 to 4, and you're like, how much of my retirement money do I want invested in a class that's about to fall from 12,000 to 4,000? Puts things in a different light, a more accurate light, in my assessment. Item 21, list of valuation-informed indexing. Oh, advisors. Okay. What I meant by this is I'd like to have a section. I've had some financial planners write to me and say, hey, Rob, you know, I found a kindred spirit. I love this. I love this valuation-informed indexing. Down the road, as the site gets bigger, I would like to have a list of those people. I'd like to have a place at the site where when somebody says, hey, and I have this question too. I've had a couple people write me and say, hey, I'd like to talk to a financial planner. And I'd like to be able to tell them, here's a list of financial planners that that, you know, understand that valuations affect long-term returns, and these people will give you, hopefully, better advice than buy-and-hold planners, you know, and sort of have a, you know, a national clearinghouse of, you know, in other words, help each other find the right people, make it easier for our movement to grow. 22. Well, this is one of the grandiose ones. I say I would like to promote PassionSaving.com as the hub of middle-class community on personal finance. You know, I have the catchphrase I have now when you come to the site. I say the old advice, the old saving and investing advice doesn't work. Here's what does. And that's what PassionSaving.com is all about today. And I think we need that. Because, you know, I mentioned the stock selling industry. And I don't think that people in the stock selling industry are corrupt. I don't think they want to mislead us. But I do believe they've made mistakes. And I do believe the fact that buy and hold has brought in hundreds of millions of dollars has made them highly reluctant to asking too many hard questions. And, you know, to some extent, I mean, I think it's bad. But I think to some extent it's human nature. You know, other fields would do the same. You know, the car selling field. You know, you don't go to a car salesman and just take his word. We shouldn't be going to the stock selling industry and taking their word on how to invest. So we need a middle, we need a site that is out there, you know, a consumer report site for investing and saving. And that's what I envision PassionSaving.com becoming. And to do that effectively, though, it has to be a big site. You know, it has to be, what I really want is to have that site that's going to, you know, sort of, tell people, are these straight shooters? You know, what are the weaknesses? And what are the good points of the various ideas being discussed so that people have a place they can trust? And what that does is it not only helps the site and all the people that come to the site, it helps the whole stock selling industry. Because a lot of the people in the stock selling industry, I believe, from comments they've told me, they would love to be telling people the straight story about stock investing. They would love it. But there are competitive pressures. They can't. If you're the only one telling the straight story, you're going to be driven out of the field. You're driven out of business. So they can't. But if you had a big site telling people the straight story, man, that helps everybody because it limits, you know, how much, you know, baloney you can get away with. But that site needs to be big enough to be a player. It can't be some little site. It's got to be big enough to have impact. So I would like to build, my personal, you know, goal it would be to have PassionSaving.com as the number one personal finance site on the internet. That's what I'd like to have happen. And that's an ambitious goal. I'd like to get as close to that as I can get. And, you know, I would need, you know, a lot of money to direct. I don't have that money today, you know, $1 million, whatever it is, to promote it, you know. But if we're able to get this other stuff on the table, changing the history of investing, I would think that, you know, the money would not be a problem. You know, we'd have a lot of, you know, a lot of people involved. We're talking about saving the U.S. economy. You know, that realistically is what we're talking about. So I don't think it's, I don't think this is so far-fetched. But it's part of my vision for the future, you know. Say a prayer for me, please. That vision comes true. My wife would be so happy. 23, change financial journalism so it is more critical. I think, as I said, the industry has a hard time being critical of itself. Everybody does. One of the roles of a good journalist is to critique. And I feel like a lot of journalists in the financial field, there are a lot of smart people in this field, but it sort of amazes me. There hasn't been a lot of critical journalism about buy and hold over the years. Go back to that quote that I started the podcast with that fellow said at the Quest for Four Pillars blog. This is the first time I've heard buy and hold described as a get rich quick scheme. You know, why the heck not? You know, why haven't you heard that before? What was his name? Jim Wyant did an interview, a video interview with John Bogle not too long ago in the summer, I think it was. And John Bogle said in that interview that he thinks valuation-informed indexing can work. He didn't endorse it. He didn't say he follows it, but he said it can work. And if it can work, it shouldn't be banned at Bogleheads or at Vanguard Diehards. And I sent Bogle an email saying just that, making the case. But Jim Wyant, he knows about valuation-informed indexing. I've talked with Jim Wyant. I offered to write an article for a site, and Jim approved it. Jim said it was great, and then he sent it to his editorial guy, who has contact, who has connections with Mel Lindauer. And the editorial guy said, "No way, Jose! You know, can't burn my bridges with Mel Lindauer." Jim should have jumped on that comment. Said, "Hey, you know, it sounds like you're talking about valuation-informed indexing. What's, you know, Mel Lindauer doesn't like valuation-informed indexing. He says he needs to protect people from it. What do you think, Mr. Bogle? That, you know, Mel Lindauer is totally in disagreement with you about this issue." That's what a journalist does. That's what it's all about, in my opinion. So that's just one example. But I think we need, I'm tempted to call it a tougher form of financial journalism, but it's tougher in one sense in that you ask hard questions, but it's a lot softer in another sense, because when journalists hold your feet to the fire in that way, it forces you to fix your mistakes. And in the long run, that's best for everybody. You know, it's best for everybody all around. So it's tougher in a sort of short-term sense. It's tough love, maybe. It's tougher in a short-term sense, but it's softer for everybody concerned in the long run. So, you know, PD person referred to me as a puppy dog poster, and, you know, I think that's pretty darn accurate. I think I'm a puppy dog poster. But I'm a puppy dog poster who learned during the great debate that it takes a tough man to make a tender chicken, like Frank Perdue said. And so I force myself to be tough because it's my job. I can't do my job if I can't post honestly. So I've got to insist on it. I can't bend on that question, because I can't serve my readers if I'm not posting honestly. And I wish I had a lot of other, you know, people in the journalist field, you know, walking this path with me, because it would make it easier for me. It would take some weight off my shoulders. 24, new appreciation for cash. This is a silly, I'm going to give a silly suggestion. It is silly, but it's revealing in a way. The big problem we have, you know, cash can be a wonderful investment. I have a podcast, if you're interested. I forget that I call it, I don't remember, the Cash is a Strategic Investment Class, I think it's called. I like that podcast. Cash has great power, because if you invest in cash, and it doesn't have to be low return, you know, I consider my I-bonds essentially a form of cash, super cash, and they provide a return of 3.5 real per year, so that's not a bad return. But if you invest in cash when stocks are insanely overvalued, your return can be very high indeed. Not your direct return, but in an indirect sense. I don't want to go into, basically, you're saving your portfolio when everybody else is losing, and then you have money to invest in stocks when they're paying super high returns. So the cash is essentially providing a high return. Higher return than stocks, for sure. Higher return than overvalued stocks, let's say. But, you know, the stock selling industry doesn't promote cash ever. And at the top of the bubble, stocks were the most likely long-term return in stocks was a negative 1% real. The most, you know, the guaranteed long-term return on I-bonds and TIPS was 4% real. So that's a difference of 5% a year. For 10 years running, the difference there is 50%. So if you went with stocks, you were giving up 50% of your portfolio for nothing, just nothing, except, you know, you could wear a little button that said, "I follow, buy, and hold." You know, we need to do something to get the stock selling industry to develop some motivation to promote cash. Not always. You don't want to promote cash when stocks offer a better deal, which is a lot of the time, but you do want to promote cash when it's the better deal. The big problem is the commissions for stocks are so much higher that, you know, the financial incentive is just, you know, you can't overcome it. So my quirky sort of oddball idea is, what if we increase the commissions for cash? Now, that seems so stupid. Why would you want to, you know, to pay higher commissions? Well, if it meant that you went into cash when cash would give you a, you know, 5% higher return on your money every year, then it'd be worth it to pay a little commission, wouldn't it? So it's a silly suggestion, but the silliness reveals an important truth, that we really are getting screwed by the fact that the so-called experts only know how to recommend one investment class for the middle class. We're being hurt in a big way, and we need to do something to change that, I believe. So we need to take some steps to, you know, help develop a greater appreciation of cash. Middle-class investors need to invest in a balanced way, and that means, yes, they need to know about stocks. Stocks are the path to financial freedom for middle-class investors. They need to know about cash, too, because there are circumstances like the circumstances that applied from January 1996 through September of 2008, when cash offers the far better long-term value proposition than overvalued, overpriced stocks, dangerous stocks. Recognizing that including emotion in the analysis makes investing advice practical. You see, this is sort of the being suggested in the title of my book and the subtitle, Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. The buy and hold model works on paper. The logic chain there is strong. It's just that they ignore emotion, and emotion is 70% of the investing project. So they're getting the 30% perfect. But when you get 30% perfect and 70% wrong, you get wrong answers. And there's almost a revulsion at the idea of looking at emotions among many buy and hold advocates, because they don't view it as practical. They view it as, oh, that's the squishy stuff, we don't talk about it. Well, that needs to change, because the truth is you can't get the numbers right if you don't look at all the factors, and emotion is a big factor. This is why we need experts both that are good at numbers and experts that are good at human emotions. We need to have both. You got to have a balanced approach because nothing else works. Not because it's a nice idea, because nothing else works. Nothing else is realistic in the long term. 27, huge discussions of strategy. Well, you know, again, people tend to think of this emotion / valuation stuff as the soft side of investing. That's what they used to call it back at Motley Fool. Well, maybe it's the soft side, but look at those four unique calculators at the website. The return predictor, the risk evaluator, the scenario surfer, and the strategy tester. Those calculators can generate thousands of insights about different investing strategies that were not available to investors in earlier days. So this isn't the soft side. It's rooted in something soft. It's rooted in trying to understand human emotion. But once you get there, then you allow the emotional effect, which evidences itself through overvaluation and undervaluation, and you start incorporating that into your numbers, and all your analysis is changed in dramatic ways. And so the whole field of investing strategy, you know, how to set your allocation, how much risk to take on, all these questions are changed overnight in very, very important ways. Some will be disheartened to hear that. They'll say, oh, no, this is what a headache. We're going to have to change. Sure, it's a headache, but it's a wonderful headache. It means getting the answers right for the first time, which means we're all going to retire years sooner. So it's a good headache, okay? It's not a bad headache. Rob's not trying to hurt you. Rob's your friend. Number 28, new ways of promoting simplicity. You know, I just want to underline with this point that Bogle's approach, passive indexing, the big selling point, the wonderful thing he did is he showed that he spoke to middle-class investors who want a simple approach to investing, and he provided it, and he showed there's a market for it. Now, all we need to do is change one thing. We need to make it workable in the real world. Bogle made a mistake on the valuations question that makes his approach not workable. If we change that, boy, have we got a powerhouse. So let's make that change. Let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. A lot of people are saying today, oh, stocks are just too dangerous. You know, the middle-class investor needs to stay away. That's not the answer. You stay away from stocks, you're going to double the amount of time it takes you to achieve, a decent retirement. So staying away from stocks isn't the answer. The answer is changing, you know, following Bogle's path, but changing the thing he got wrong and flipping it all so that, you know, what has become the worst investing strategy ever concocted by the human mind becomes the best. And again, as I said before, you know, we should be recognizing that we wouldn't have that strategy if it not been for the people who had gone before us, including obviously John Bogle, hero mine. New understanding of emotion. Well, I said that already in an earlier one. It's caused by get-rich-quick schemes. But I guess the point I wanted to make here is that Bill Bernstein said the other day in a comment at bogleheads.org, he says only 2%, he believes, of the population understands how to invest effectively or has the emotional balance to invest effectively. Well, That's quite a statement, and I think it's a. Bernstein sees it as a statement of, you know, he sees it as sad, but he feels that it reflects, you know, that people aren't good at math and all this sort of thing. Well, the real problem is you don't need to be good at math to invest effectively, and stock investing isn't so difficult. What it really reflects on is the buy and hold model, which adds layers upon layers upon layers of complexity in an attempt to rationalize craziness. It is crazy to think that prices don't matter when buying stocks. And the buy and hold model, in order to cover up the craziness, has to adopt layers upon layers upon layers of, you know, calculations, because they're trying to confuse themselves as well as their readers. So all you need to do is to you know, clear out all the nonsense, and we can get that percentage from 2% up to maybe 98%, you know, in a short amount of time if we get serious about this. I believe, I'm an optimist, but I believe that. You know, I don't know here. I have respect and appreciation for the inflammatory and the disruptive. Well, what I meant there is that I was banned a second time at Morningstar the other day. And the reason they gave is that my post was quote unquote inflammatory. And all I did in the post was quote a paragraph from the book, The Wisdom of Crowds. And the idea that that could be inflammatory is, of course, crazy. But it's inflammatory. What's inflammatory about the post is the name of the guy who signed it, Rob Bennett. And I have a record, you know, everyone knows I'm the person who discovered the errors in the old school safe withdrawal studies. And that's going to go with me everywhere I go for the rest of my life. And I'm not ashamed of it. I'm obviously not going to apologize for it. That shouldn't be inflammatory. Giving accurate numbers should not be inflammatory. And so we shouldn't only be tolerating honest posting or inflammatory posting. We should be encouraging it, welcoming it, because it's through so-called inflammatory posting that we learn. It's only when people point out our mistakes that we learn. So we should be grateful when people do that, according to Rob Bennett. 31, bring an end to the economic crisis. Well, I had to include that because that's really the point here. How do we bring an end to the economic crisis? By reassuring middle-class investors that they can, you know, that they're going to be able to retire on time. Valuation-informed indexing lets the average investor retire 5 years sooner than is possible following a buy-and-hold strategy. Well, a lot of people could use that little bit of good news today, so let's spread the word. 32, improve political discussions. You know, as I say, I think I mentioned in one of the earlier discussions that the political debate is being poisoned today because middle-class investors are scared for their futures. And again, We tell them the realities of stock investing, and we can buck up their courage. We can get out of this economic crisis. You know, it's not going to be overnight. But once we turn in the right direction, people start feeling better each day rather than worse. We're walking towards the sun instead of walking towards the darkness. So that makes a big difference. 33, continue to show numbers benefits. You know, what I mean by this is it's good to talk about theory. That's what I often do. But it's also good to show with the numbers. Like, so I try to incorporate claims like, you know, you can retire 5 years sooner. In other words, prove your case. You know, show the logic chain, make the theoretical case, and then prove it with numbers. So let's make that a habit. You know, let's put a focus on that. 34, peace, love, and understanding. What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding, said Elvis Costello. We should all be working together. There's not one. This fact just amazes me. There's not one person alive who would lose anything by learning how to invest effectively. So none of this should have any controversy attached to it at all. So, you know, let's all give each other a hug and move forward in a spirit of warmth and friendship. Item 35, there's, you know, all the items that I haven't mentioned that we're going to learn about when we have this national debate. All these items, 35 items came about as the result of hundreds of community members, but hundreds of community members operating under the most difficult circumstances imaginable. You know, with all this abusive posting going on, all these bricks being thrown all around us. Think about what we're going to learn when we have not hundreds, not thousands, but millions of middle-class investors all participating in a constructive, positive, life-affirming way. You're not going to be able to count the insights on investing. You see, we're opening Pandora's box, but not a bad Pandora's box. We're opening this wonderful box of just, you know, this unlimited mine of wonderful insights. That's where we're headed, I believe. That's Rob Bennett's vision of the future. We're headed into the golden age of middle class investing. And all we really need to do there is the most simple thing to realize that most humble goal of mine that I be able to post when I wake up tomorrow morning anywhere on the internet and give my honest views on investing, and you be able to do the same, and your neighbor be able to do the same, and your friend be able to do the same. When we can all do that, boy, we're going to turn this thing around and we're never going to look back. Good luck with your investing strategies.